This episode may contain explicit language. Welcome to Karen Feeding, the show where we raise the next generation together. I'm Lucy Lopez. I host another podcast, the Mamacita Rica podcast. I'm mother to Amelia, who's 13, Avery, who's 11, and we survive Miami.
I'm Jamila Lemieux. I'm a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column, and mom to Naima, who is 11, and we live in Los Angeles.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the family travel blog, Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom of three littles, Henry, who's 12, Oliver, who's 9, and Teddy, who's 7. We live in Tokyo, Japan.
For the next two episodes, we're talking about 420 and navigating the world of weed as a parent. First up, today we'll ask our resident weed mom, Jamila, about everything from what weed does for her to where to stash your stash in a house of kids. And then, of course, we'll debrief on our week with a round of triumphs and fails. So let's get this going. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll see you back here for a chat about weed. All right, we're back, and it's time to ask a weed mom. Jamila, do you get, like, an introduction? Like, is there a bong hit sound effect when I call you weed mom? You've talked about your cannabis usage on the show before, but can you give us just a quick overview of your feelings on this?
Yeah, you know, I think that cannabis is safe and largely legal. It should be completely legal, but I am a privileged person. I live in a state where both medical and recreational use are legal, and I use it for both reasons. It helps me with my anxiety. It helps me sleep. On occasion, I use it to write. There's a strain I like that's really good for creativity. I use it when I'm going to tell jokes. And at times it helps me to be a better parent, you know. Naima is aware of the fact that I, you know, use weed, and we've talked about it as being an adult thing, much like alcohol, you know, and it's not something that she sees me overindulge in. It's not something I overindulge in, but she, you know, has experienced me off weed, and I think that the times that I've used it around her have allowed me to be present and engaged and, you know, more relaxed parent. Not relaxed like senses down, you know what I mean? But just like without anxiety.
I think before we start, Lucy, we should definitely like check in on where we are just so listeners are clear. I am not a marijuana pot user, have never been, never tried it, not really interested in trying it, but I'm feel like responsible adult usage of it seems fine. Lucy, where are you on, like, what is your stance?
So for the longest time, like right after my brother's passing, I was at, like, I went to a doctor, and a doctor prescribed gummies. I didn't want to go down the smoking road. I didn't want to smell like it. I didn't want to worry where to stash it. I wasn't ready to have those conversations with my children at that point in my life, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I did also, I was battling like a lot of feelings, and I needed something. He was like, well, I can prescribe marijuana. And I go, but I don't want to smoke. He goes, well, you could always get like a gummy, take it before you go to bed. And that helped me for an entire year to sleep. Mm. Where it really relaxed me. Currently, right now, I don't do it. It's almost like I don't need it. I really truly treated it like medicine. It was like, this is what I need to help me fall asleep. This is what I need to just not be in my head when I would go to sleep. And it was like maybe for like, I want to say like a good 6 months where I would do it like every night before I go to bed, and then I just stopped. But I don't know how to have this conversation with my kids. I don't, and I know they know what it smells like. I mean, when it's the holidays and the entire family is in town and you step into the garage after you eat a big meal, I mean, it doesn't smell like incense inside the garage. My kids are like, oh, it smells like tía. That's Spanish for aunt. And for me, it's like, I don't feel like I need to right now for me. I just don't know how I'm going to handle the conversation once my kids want to talk about it. But I'm just like so curious. Like, I need to know all of it Like, I want to know when you smoke it, what time of the day, do you smoke it? All of that.
Let's start with that. So you, Lucy, this is, we're going to do, it's not hot takes, but like you pepper her with your simple questions and that'll help us all be kind of on the same page because I'm sure other people want to know. So Lucy, go.
Okay. What time of the day are you smoking?
Generally during the week, you know, particularly on days where I have Naima, I smoke before dinner.
Okay. Does she know you're smoking? Can you smell it? Are you doing it in front of her? Are you doing it in the bedroom? Do you go outside? Do you step into the garage? Do you go in your car? Hot box? How does that work?
So we live in a no smoking building.
Got it.
Which is awful. but it does allow, you know, it forces me to be super discreet with her. Not that I would smoke in front of her. You know, in our previous apartment, I would smoke in the bath. We had our own bathrooms. So I would smoke in my bathroom. Like on the weekends, like when I have comedy class on Saturday. Oh, you know, if I go to a social activity, like a party or something, I may smoke before that or during that. I smoke a little bit before a comedy class on Saturdays. Yeah, I may smoke a little earlier in the day and like Saturday and Sunday, but generally like Monday through Friday is just in the evenings.
Are you rolling up a blunt or are you doing the vape, the new cool kid stuff? Like, is it that you smoke and nobody can smell anything? Is it that?
You can smell me. I generally smoke pre-rolls.
Okay.
I buy them already rolled because I'm not good at rolling and I've gotten lazy. But yeah, I've tried vaping when I first so I went through a heavy smoking period during the pandemic and I'm not there mm-hmm. anymore. But that was kind of like I was so passionate about not becoming an alcoholic. You know what I mean? Like everybody was drinking so totally. Much and eating so much. And I was like, I'm not going to gain weight. I'm not going to become an alcoholic. But I definitely went through like a brief pothead period where I smoked in the morning, I smoked in the afternoon, I smoked at night, you know, for maybe a year. And so like I took some kind of breaks after that to kind of like break my, you know, like my tolerance is still super high. Like I thought it would reset because I don't, you know. But and when I smoke, like most nights, like I don't smoke a lot, you know. It's like I go hit it a couple times and I come back inside. You know what I mean? So, like, the amount of weed I'm getting at a time, like, I don't typically smoke a whole joint by myself or anything like that. It's just, like, a little bit.
When you say you function under the influence, is it, like, kind of like when I knock back a couple of glasses of Pinot Noir and I'm, like, everyone is tolerable around me? Is that what it feels like for you?
Yes.
Okay, got it. Would you prefer... I have so many questions,
no,
you guys.
Go.
It's embarrassing.
Go.
I'm embarrassed. Go ahead. It. I'm super cringe right now, and I really don't care. Okay, so gummies. So like I said, was prescribed gummies. I wasn't eating an entire gummy because I didn't want to see the other side of the world. You know, I didn't want to go bonkers out of my head, so I would eat like a quarter of it, right? Mm-hmm. Do you eat gummies? Do you do the drops? Or are you just like the smoke and then that's it?
I do gummies on occasion. Like I used to use edibles frequently, like during the pandemic, I was also using edibles. I've had a couple bad edible experiences. One in college, like the first time I had one, I got so high, I threw up. It was terrible. And then there was another time I thought I had this was about 5 or 6 years ago when I was in New York. I thought I had toxic shock syndrome, you know, what you get from a tampon. And yeah. I had just eaten too much of like a really strong edible. And I like was a wreck. I went to the ER. It was a thing. Never told them about the edibles. I just was like, I don't know what's wrong with me. Help.
Jamila, no way.
Yeah. I had a speaking event that day. Like I had to miss it. It was a mess. So I'm careful with edibles. I actually have like a pandemic purchase. I have a machine that turns like butter and oil or whatever into like weed oil, weed butter. Mm-hmm. So I can make my own edibles. And I've used it like once. I spent like $200 on this thing. I keep saying I'm going to do it again, but edibles are fine. You know, I usually have a few. You know,
do you feel like you're not in control in real life. Like, I feel like if I were to be zoinked or a little stony baloney, as my husband likes to say, I like to be in control of the situation at all times. I am one of those parents that I'm like, if I am stoned, I'm going to turn on the TV and we're going to be attacked by Martians. And then what? Then you're going to be high. I need to be sober. These are things that go through my head. Do you go through any of that when you take your first hit? Do you think about the worst things or no?
No. But again, like, I can't tell you the last time I was stoned. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just not smoking that much at a time. Like, even on like maybe a Saturday night, say if I'm on a date, we may like pause, you know, like step outside and smoke a little bit. And I may smoke more than I would, you know, like on a regular Tuesday night. But okay. Even then, like, I can't tell you the last time I was, like, stoned. And again, part of it is my tolerance, but I'm just also not getting that high. Just the same way, like, you can have a drink or you can have five mm-hmm. drinks, and those are going to have a very different, you know.
And what you drink matters.
And what you drink matters, right? So for me.
And the same thing with the strain. Like you just said, there's a certain strain that I smoke when I'm writing. Yeah. I get that.
And so I
get
that. I would say like the average weed that I smoke is more along the lines of like having a glass of like white Zinfandel or Moscato. You know what I mean? Like it's sweet. It's not strong. It doesn't have a high alcohol content, you know? So you might not even feel anything. Like I don't always feel, you know, like something's happening, you know, I just feel, you know, I just feel chill. I feel like myself.
Jamila, you are so much more braver than I am. I am the ultimate chicken shit when it comes to stuff like, I wouldn't even know what to do in my brain. I just feel that if I were to take a hit of weed immediately, I'd be going into complete panic mode. So when you say that, is it safe to say you feel like it kind of makes you a better parent or you're better at parenting situations? Is that safe to say?
Yes, you know.
That blows my mind. That blows my mind.
I do want to move to a couple of the questions from Facebook, because we did put out a call just to see who had ideas on things they wanted us to talk about. So the first one is from Ted, and he says, since you asked about strong opinions, I forget the exact question and context, but there was an episode a few weeks ago where the host advised the listener to use marijuana prior to attending some sort of children's event. This seems wildly irresponsible. I'm all for liberalization of drug laws, and American society is definitely moving in the right direction in terms of acceptance of drug use, but this is a bridge too far. I can't imagine any of the hosts would ever endorse being drunk in this scenario, and there's no reason it should be acceptable to be high there either. A children's birthday party is not a responsible time to use marijuana, full stop.
Well, drunk and high aren't the same thing, because again, there's levels. You know, I would advise you to have a glass of wine before going to a children's birthday party, 100%. You know, like if that's going to relax you, I wouldn't say bring a tumbler full of wine to a children's birthday party. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't say drink a bottle of wine at a children's birthday party. You know, like, having a couple of hits of weed is not the same as being drunk, you know? When we lived in New York, I served alcohol at children's birthday parties. So you're probably talking to the wrong person, you know?
Yeah, I do. There was quite the discussion, and Jacob responded to Ted saying, I disagree with this. We've been to plenty of family kids parties where the hosts offer adult beverages for the adults. I don't see how this would be any different if you understand tolerance and know your limits. But I think there's definitely some dialogue here about like response. It seems like people can't quite wrap their heads around responsible use of marijuana with parenting. Like I feel like every time you bring it up, that's kind of the question, is like, how could you do this? But in those scenarios, there are people that are drinking or doing other things, and we sort of accept that. I guess why do we have a hard time grasping the idea of kind of responsible use? Or you think it's just that we haven't like accepted the use of marijuana in these parenting situations the way we have with alcohol? I just feel like we are very flippant about, well, go have a glass of wine, or like, then I had, you know, I was cooking and I had a glass of wine, and that takes the kind of 5 o'clock madness off, but we're
but look how long it took us to get to that flippant attitude towards alcohol. It took us forever and a day. I personally think our children's generation is gonna be the generation of like, yeah, we don't drink, we have edibles. Would you like one? Like, I truly believe that's the kind of world my kids are gonna live in.
Yeah.
Where they're not gonna be as Jamila,
like, stigmatized, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, Jamila's saying, like, I used to serve alcohol at a kid's party. Like, I am from a loud-ass Cuban family, and there are two coolers. There's one cooler with water and Capri Suns, and then there's another cooler full of beer and wine. And they're right next to each other, and children just know not to reach for the beer. This is your cooler. So I feel that maybe within the next 10 years or so, we're going to be at a point where they're going... society is going to be the same way that we are with those coolers with weed. I really do feel that way. And we might be even closer to that idea than we even believe it, you know?
Yeah. I do disagree that it took us a while to get comfortable with alcohol, you know, because alcohol is as American as apple pie. You know what I mean? Like, okay. I think about watching shows from the 50s where there might be like a breakfast martini.
No, I mean, I think that's the thing. Because, right. I mean... I feel like I love a good rule and following a good rule. So if the rule is the rule is don't do it, I feel like I in some way can relate to him, even though I don't think I would. Maybe Jamila, because we've had so many conversations about it, yeah. I do feel like that's one of the things that has changed my perception, just being able to hear about responsible use, right? In that sense. But I think that certainly a past Elizabeth would have been like, absolutely, we shouldn't be doing this at a birthday party. Because yeah. I just, you know, don't know what that looks like. Or like, there are so many places where the rule is no that I feel like yeah. that we just shouldn't. So I don't know. I mean, that's why these conversations are helpful. I do want to get to Melissa asked, I wouldn't mind some insight into when and how you hide your stash. I have a 6-year-old, so up really high works for now. I love a great logistical question. Jamila, where are you putting your stuff?
I usually keep it in the car. I do have like a few little stashes in the house. Like I'm looking at this pretty tin that I got from IKEA that I keep like some of my, for when I do roll, like I keep my supplies in there. You know,
are you worried by keeping it in the car? Like, can that cause problems if you get pulled over or anything? Or no, because California is...
I think as long as it's not like in an ashtray or something, you know what
like
I mean?
Like that it's like,
yeah, just away. Like I have a bag, you know, where I usually keep yeah. like my pre-rolls and like, you know, I just usually keep it in the bag it came in. I just leave the bag in the car and like when I want some, I just get it out the car. But again, Naeem is also very like, she's at an age where she's in my stuff, but she's not in all my stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I have sex toys. She's not looking through them. Like, you know, she wants to play with my makeup. I think the biggest thing that I worry about keeping away from her is edibles. You know what I mean? Like, just the idea that she may be tempted one day or, you know, mistake.
I mean, they're candy or something else.
Yeah,
right?
It's like... Yeah. Virtually impossible to mistake. You know what I mean? Most of them are so well labeled, you know, that, like... you just ignored every possible warning. You know what I mean? Like the packages are not easy to get into. So it's improbable that she would have one. But on top of the refrigerator is always a good place.
Sorry. Who wants to put their hand up there? It's so dusty.
Nobody wants to touch the top of the refrigerator. So I think that's genius. Just put it on top of the refrigerator. Call it a day.
You don't keep your cereal. I keep cereal up there.
On top of your refrigerator?
Mm-hmm.
I keep my bread on top of my refrigerator. I don't know why. It's something I learned from my grandmother. There's either bread up there or mason jars of whatever. Some stuff. Some Cuban shit that I do. Okay, so Anissa told us, I have insane anxiety and when I smoke, it makes me a much more relaxed parent. My son knows I smoke, use edibles. It's legal here. And we have very frank conversations about drug use. My biggest issue is the shame stigma attached to it. I feel like I'm doing something very wrong when I smoke as a parent, and it's hard to lose that stigma. It's better for me than drinking to excess, but America's demonization of it, which is in itself rooted in racism, let's not forget that, makes it hard to accept about myself.
I totally understand the stigma, but you just have to make a decision to free yourself from that. You know, I mean, it's not going, like, is it changing and evolving? Yes. Are things getting better? Yes. But there'll always be people who have those attitudes. But honestly, like, I mean, look at how it's changed. You know, if you're old enough to be a parent, I mean, even if you're a very young parent, just in the past 10 years, you know, that like celebrities have marijuana lines and, you know, it's just so much more socially acceptable, you know, than it's ever been. But like, I don't know, like you just have to divorce yourself from white supremacy as best as you can, you know, and you're already doing the thing. So it's not like your shame over the stigma is stopping you from doing something that, you know, is good for yourself. So you've won the biggest part of the battle, you know, like I could see if you were just like, well, I want to try it, but I'm afraid to because of the stigma. You're already doing the thing. So, like, don't let these imaginary white people in your head or church grandmothers or, you know, PTA moms or anyone else, you know, stop you from doing something that, you know, helps you be a better parent.
The more that it comes into, like, pop culture and out there, and I am, like, I think continuously surprised by the people that are smoking, doing edibles that I had no idea. Mm-hmm. Like that it just is something they've been doing and it wasn't something we talked about. And like we said, in the same way that we would talk about drinking. And now as it comes, they can make an off comment about it. And in many ways, I mean, I think the discourse on it helps keep us all, like it encourages responsible use if it's something that we can talk about and know kind of who's doing what, especially in those in your social circle, right? I mean, I think being able to talk about times where use went bad in the same way that we talk about times alcohol went bad is a positive thing for responsible use is kind of my point. And there's a lot of people out there that are using, I think particularly I know a lot of people that use edibles that I had no idea, but are using it to take the edge off, just kind of relax things. And that it seems really beneficial to how they are parenting.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I could not have survived those 6 months after George passed away if it weren't for edibles every night. And it was just, like I said, it was like a gummy and I would divide it up in four and have a little piece. And it truly helped me. And then when I felt like a little bit like myself again, I was okay. I was like, okay, I don't need this anymore. I don't know. I guess my body has that gift for me, you know, but I really truly didn't want to take any sleeping pills, any kind of meds. Like I just like, I don't want to do that. But I was very aware that I needed some help in that big moment in my life, right? So the gummy saved my life. And I can laugh about it now. If my brother would be here on earth, he'd be like, of course only you could have gummy to go to sleep. Like, yeah, that's your deal. But yeah, it helped me. And again, I treat it like medicine and don't really need it anymore, you know?
Lucy, at the time, was that something you like talked openly about or were you more?
No, this is the first time I'm talking about it. I guess I feel really comfortable with you guys. Yeah, I just didn't feel the need to talk about it. I saw how people were reacting to, you know, just reacted in general to people smoking joints or eating gummies. And I was like, let me just keep this to myself. But I can't deny that it truly helped me. And also when my mom was going through chemo, gummies really helped her with her appetite and helped her relax after, because you know they pump you full of this medicine one day and 3 days after you're feeling like shit. And I had to go to the store, get her the drops, put a drop on her tongue, and it would mellow her out for the rest of the week. And I saw it more as a medicine and not as recreation. So my view on it is a little different from, you know, maybe my friends or whatever, but yeah, I don't need it. I don't need it. It's fun. Don't get me wrong. I had the best dreams ever, but yeah. We should mention we did get a few people wanting to hear from an expert specifically about weed and the teenage brain, and we have great news about that. On Monday, Zach will sit down with a doctor who studies the way teens are using and thinking about cannabis. If you have questions for that expert, there is still time to send them our way, so please get in touch. You can email us at KarenFeedingPod@slate.com or our favorite option, leave us a voicemail at 646-357-9318. You might just hear your question on Monday's show. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in a second for Triumphs and Fails. And we're back and moving on to the segment we call Triumphs and Fails. Elizabeth, do you have any triumphs or fails for us?
I have a fail. Oh. Okay, I'm going to set the scene. So I'm in Tokyo. I get up very early to podcast. And I say this because I need you to understand the state of mind that I'm in. And, you know, Jeff's been traveling a lot. So last week, Jeff was not home. And when he's not home, I feel like I have this like heightened, just like hyper awareness of everything going on, like every creak, every noise, every, right? Because it's all my problem. And on numerous times, also, I want to say when Jeff's here, it has been proven that I'm going to be the one that wakes up when something happens and I'm going to have to get him up. So I don't know why the anxiety happens when he's not home, but I just feel like everything is a bit more heightened and I'm more nervous. So I try to like record the podcast, do a few quiet tasks. Sometimes I'm really tired and I get back in bed. So last week I got back in bed. I try to be really quiet because I really don't want to wake the kids any earlier because that makes, you know, then before we get up for school, because that makes a really bad morning. So I got back into bed and I must have kind of drifted off to sleep. Like usually I just get back, I'm doing a couple email things. And all of a sudden I hear a sound in the house, and it sounds like a large bird, and I'm going to play the sound for you in a minute. But also, okay, in Tokyo, we like don't really have birds. We have some, like raven things that like crows that come and pick at the trash, but they don't really sound like this. And then we have like some little tiny cute little birds that like, you know, eat crumbs and things and fly around. But I'm laying in bed and this is the sound I hear. It sounds like, at first I think maybe it's the kids, but my heart starts beating. Like even now telling the story, my heartbeat is like, it's beating. And I'm thinking like, there is a bird in this house. Like it's in the house. So I don't know that I'm the only person, but something about my childhood makes me like, I have to like get down. And it's like if someone knocks on the door, I'm like fight, flight, or free. I'm a freeze. And so I'm like freezing. But then I'm like, Elizabeth, you are the only adult in this home. There's a bird in this house. You have to go get this bird. So I am like trying to sneak around the house. I'm super spooked. And I'm like trying to identify where the sound is coming from. And it's gotten a little warm. So we're sleeping with some windows open. And all of a sudden in my panic, I realize, oh my God, it's in the children's room. Like I've got three kids asleep. There's some huge bird that I do not know, because it is, the calls are like getting, like as I get to the door, the calls are like loud. I have two windows open in there. We have these screens, but I'm thinking it got through the screen. And I am like looking in the house. I'm thinking like, okay, I'm going to open this door and I need to like have something to defend myself against the bird. But it's like the morning, I have some kind of like pillow. I don't know what I'm thinking. And I also don't want to wake the kids. Like I said, early mornings. So I like open the door. And I'm going in there and I hear like a big, you know, like the hawk thing screaming. And then I hear, can you play Mora clip number one? This is what I hear. You guys.
This is Bird Note.
I have set the Alexa to play the podcast Bird Note.
Oh my God.
At 6:30 in the morning to wake my children up. It is not a bird. Today's episode is on hawks. So the first part of the episode is just hawk calls. And I thought I was going to die. I honestly thought, like, my heart, you know, the children are like, what is happening?
Wow. Because
they're waking up. Mom is like, wow. I must have looked. I thought I was capturing a bird and defending my children. No, we're educating on bird noises over here. So, giant fail. The kids are now think it's hysterical to just play bird calls, like turn the Alexa or whatever on to play bird calls. Because they're like, Mom thought there was a bird in the house. Wow. Legitimately, though, I thought I was going to capture a hawk. I was going to be the hero here. Me and my pillow, we're going to get this hawk out of our house.
Yo.
Wow.
Uh-huh. It's just Alexa.
It's just Alexa
trying you.
And some bird education. Let this be a warning.
Wow.
Jamila, are you jumping on the fail train too? Because I'm failing on parenting this week for sure.
I have a triumph and a fail, but you all are going to tell me it's not a fail, so it's fine. So a few weeks ago, one of my homegirls reached out to me and said she was going on a girls' trip to Mexico, right outside of Cancun, and somebody had dropped out, and she wanted to know if I would go. You know, and I was like, I don't know. I was like, how much is it? And she told me, and I was like, okay, well, let me look up flights. And she was like, no, that's including the flight. I was like, oh, well, this is different. So I'm going. I leave on Wednesday. I'm so excited. I'll be gone from Wednesday to Sunday. I haven't been on a I haven't been on a proper vacation in years. The fail is that when Naima woke up this morning, she cried that she wasn't going to see me. Because, like, I'll drop her off tomorrow at school, and then I wouldn't see her again until I come back. She won't see – I get back late on Sunday, so she won't see me until next Monday. And so she ended up staying home from school because she was just like, I need my mommy. I need a day with my mommy.
That just means you have a good bond. That's you know.
You're fine, okay? Listen,
I think if I had the money, a better mom.
If I had the money, I'd be leaving with you too, okay? Go do the thing that you need to go do and go have fun, okay? You're an amazing mom. Rock out. Like, just go and do it all. Okay?
I think the girls' trips too are more than just like getting away. I find I just got back from a one night in a hotel with a bunch of girls at an onsen. And I didn't even really know these women that well, but there's something about being away with a group of women that is very soul filling and just remembering that you're a person and that you're cared for and you're loved. So I think it's even beyond just like, I need to get away from this it's like something we actually really need, that connection. And that just being a person, and you're modeling like excellent self-care and friendship to her. And I, you know, a little bit of absence really does make the heart grow fonder.
Yeah.
I agree.
She'll be okay.
Also, she's going to forget.
She's totally going to forget. Even though I have like multiple trips, I have like a trip plan for June and one for July. So
it's okay.
This will be interesting, but she'll get through it.
She'll get through fine. It.
She'll be fine. I need everybody to help me decide if this is a fail or a triumph on my end.
Let's hear it.
My youngest, Avery, had the entire family, so me, Gino, Amelia, were in the car, convinced that she stole a baby chicken from a farming supply store we were in.
What?
This child of mine, y'all don't even understand. We're already like about 2 minutes, you know, down the road, maybe five. And she goes, hey, mama. And I go, yeah. She goes, can you turn around and look back here? And I go, yeah. And I turn around and she has her hands cupped together. She's like, I took a chicken. And I go, what? And then she went and she pretended that she threw it in the back seat of the Subi. And I go, she took a chicken. She took a chicken. And my husband pulls the car over, pats her down, searches the car. And she goes, I'm just kidding. I didn't take a chicken. This child's sense of humor is going to be the death of me.
This kid had us all convinced that she stole a chicken. And although it was pretty funny afterwards because she had us all convinced she took it, I got a little worried, like, deep down. I'm like, yo, this kid is, like, a really great liar. Like, or an actress.
So as you're stopping the car, she's not like, I'm joking. She's committed to the bit.
Dead face committed to the bit. Her sister, who is, I've shared with you, is 13 going on 30 and is very responsible. She's like, Avery, this is not funny. Where is the chicken? Where's the chicken? Show mama the chicken. She was like, you gotta look for it. I think it ran over there. Our asses had to pull over. So I want to know, am I failing because she lied to us, or are we winning because she's a great actress? Like, please weigh in. Tell me your thoughts on Chicken Gate, because this child is going to be the death of me.
I think it's somewhere in the middle that she needs to hone the comedic ability. Like, the first part is fine, but knowing when the joke needs to end is an art. And in my opinion, the joke needs to end somewhere between the pulling over and anyone opening a door of a car, right? The pulling over, kind of funny. Once people are getting out of the car looking for the chicken, the joke has gone too far.
Ladies, this girl had a face, like, the most stoic, like, just like that angel face. Like, what? I didn't do anything. She was like, you better look for it. I think it's in the back, mama. I'm like, what?
So
I'm
see,
like,
that part's the fail.
See, I don't know. Okay. I like a good bit. You know what I mean?
No, you cannot be that Didi. You cannot be that Didi in her life. You cannot.
Like, the commitment is really impressive. Like, a lot of kids would have folded when the car pulled over. And she kept going. Like,
she kept going. She kept going. Gino's like, come here. And, like, lifted her shirt, checked her pocket. Like, the whole thing. And she was like, I'm kidding. There's no chicken. I didn't take a chicken.
That's like, funny.
Yo, out of control. So is it a triumph or a fail? It's an in-between?
It's a triumph for raising a witty child.
That's true.
Okay, thank you.
And a fail because maybe your parenting tactics need to change.
Oh, God.
Like, maybe instead of pulling over and falling for the chicken bit, you just turn back to the store and make her go in. Okay, go return the chicken.
Oh my God.
You commit to the bit too. You stole the chicken, return the chicken. Then she's like, there's no chicken. You're like, you said
there was
a chicken.
Oh, that's a good idea. We were just so convinced that there was, we were so convinced because when we were at this, like, it's at this tractor supply store where they have, like, farm things. And she was like, I need a chicken. They're only a dollar. I'm like, we're not buying a chicken. We cannot house a chicken. This is, like, real. This is a life. No, this is not happening. Come on, please let me have a chicken. No, you cannot have a chicken. The entire time we're there, we cannot have a chicken. 3 minutes out, we've already passed, like, two lights. She was like, I took a chicken. Like this. Did this. Cupped her hands. Here's a chicken. And then one like that. And pretended she threw it in the back seat.
It's very clever.
All right. Very clever child or terrible parenting skills. Listeners,
maybe you should
as
get
always,
her a chicken.
We're not getting a chicken. No. You're not going to be that DD either. Listeners, as always, we want to hear your parenting stories too. Did you have a great triumph or a funny fail? Send them to us and we might share them on the show. You can write us at our email, careandfeedingpod@slate.com, or leave a voicemail, 646-357-9318. Was that a chicken? I heard a chicken. We want to know what you all think, so be sure to reach out to us and keep the conversation going. That's our show. Subscribe, leave a rating, a review, and tell everybody. If you want more parenting advice, you can find Care and Feeding, the column, on Slate.com. This episode of Care and Feeding is produced by Maura Curry. Shasha Leonard is the voice of our listeners. Alicia Montgomery is the VP of Slate Audio for Elizabeth Newcamp and Jamila Lemieux. I'm Lucy Lopez. Thanks for listening.